But we've been having these conversations throughout the last week, this week, and next week called Third Ways. And the idea is we exist in a world of polarities where there's one extreme or there's the other extreme. And often when we live like that and when our society understands that everything is an either or, then we have trouble embracing and learning and walking through the realities of gray areas or the realities of alternate options. Sometimes it's gray areas. Sometimes it's actually a different idea altogether than the only two choices that we think we've been presented with. So last week we talked about a view of the Bible that potentially doesn't let it breathe and move and flex or have much humanity if we're not careful. And then on the other side, a view of the Bible that doesn't give it any authority or inspiration. And so that's neither of those things, I think, are what Jesus intended us to read the scriptures as. This week, we're going to talk about when we find ourselves in times of trouble, as I think a Beatle once wrote and sang. We're going to talk about conflict, and we're going to talk about the challenge of facing evil. And when we have experiences in our lives, so just think about the last time that you felt wronged in some way, or that you felt some sort of a potential for a confrontation in some way. And here's what happens. Just give yourself a second to think about that. It might be something little, might be a conversation that you had with your spouse. It could be something that happened on a drive-in. It could be a coworker. It could be a big thing, a major kind of ongoing fight with a family member. But when we think about these things that hit us, when there's the potential for conflict or disagreement or feeling wronged in one way or another, essentially, when we are, and this is all in our opinion, but when we are confronted with evil, we have two choices that most of us think about and two choices that are talked about. And on the one end, and you know where we're going to go with this as soon as you see the first word, on the one end, we have the fight response, right? So I am going to fight fire with fire. This is the idea of if I see something that makes me angry, I'm going to come right back at it with a lot of force and energy. I'm gonna quickly engage. And on the other side of the continuum here, we have what we call flight, right? And flight means that we're going to avoid, or we're going to run away. And these are part of our instincts as human beings, as mammals. You know, the idea of fight or flight, we look at something and we assess the risk. And when we assess the risk, we decide what's better. Can I win this? Should I fight? Or am I going to run away and protect myself? And so what do we do in this world where these are the assumptions that the extremes are, yet we call ourselves and identify as followers of Jesus, followers of a different way? Is there a third way beyond a fight or flight mentality? Spoiler, I'm going to say, yeah, there is. So we're going to take a look at the teachings of Jesus in what I think, in terms of Christian wisdom, should be the center of our understanding of how we live our lives. And it's from the Sermon on the Mount, or the Sermon on the Hillside, from Matthew 5. Matthew 5 through 8 is the Sermon on the Mount, or 5 through 7, a little bit into there. And so what Jesus is talking about, he starts this teaching. He's been doing these things called antitheses, where he's talking about how in your mind you have one thing that you've kind of either heard or decided or you live by, but I'm going to redefine that. And when a rabbi said something like that, it was kind of a big deal. It was getting very touchy, because usually when a rabbi says you've heard that it was said, or you've heard it said, or it is written, then he's talking about something that is actually in their scriptures. And it's about, and then if it's followed by, but I say, you get a lot of ears prick up and turn around and lean in, because wait, what are you about to do? You're about to potentially question or redefine something that we hold pretty true or pretty dear. And so when we think about these, we're like, oh, this is an interesting teaching. But when the original hearers heard about some of this stuff, it would have been pretty radical. And so it's good for us to enter into that. And I actually think when we live it out, it's also very radical today. But let's take a look at this. In Matthew 5, Jesus says to those who were listening, you have heard that it was said, eye for eye and tooth for tooth. But I tell you, do not resist an evil person. If anyone slaps you on the right cheek, turn to them the other cheek also. If anyone wants to sue you and take your shirt, hand over your coat as well. If anyone forces you to go 1 mile, go with them 2 miles. Give to the one who asks you, and do not turn away from the one who wants to borrow from you. Super intense, yes? Think about the reality of when you look at this teaching for the first time, and you hear, whoa, hold on, someone hits you, and you say, hit me again, hit me again, hit me again, with no response. It sounds like you're just laying down. It sounds incredibly passive. And indeed, passive with two S's has been the argument that's been levied against this teaching by Christians and those who are not Christians alike. This is so passive that this is impossible. Jesus is talking about some sort of theoretical attitude, but not in real life. Otherwise, you're just opening yourself to abuse. That's a very valid statement, by the way. When we read this in a certain way, and when it has been used by those who are not seeking after Jesus, it has often been used to keep people in their places. But it's interesting that as we peel these layers back, keeping people in their places is the exact opposite of what this was all about. So I need, I need a helper. So somebody who doesn't mind being on stage, come on up and join me. All right, Jess, great. That's good, because Jess and I are have a trusting enough relationship that I can have some fun. Okay, so Jess, if I just naturally say, can you put your hands up? Okay, I'm just gonna push against you a little bit. Okay, so what did Jess just do? I didn't tell her this is not a setup. What did she just do? Yeah, she naturally braced herself and began putting force right back against me. Okay, so the first thing that she naturally did, I did not tell her, hey, can you push back? I just said, I'm going to push a little bit here, and the natural response was to meet my force with an equal and opposite force. You're going to just stay here, so get comfortable, okay? So what we see in the first statement, you've heard that it was said an eye for an eye and a tooth for a tooth, but I tell you, do not resist an evil person. Now, that quote is from Exodus 22, I think. It's okay, you can look it up yourselves. We're not going to go there. But when that's happening, it's in the midst of a lot of law, and Jesus is misspeak there. And Yahweh is speaking to his people, and he says, listen, you live in a culture right now that has unmitigated revenge as a part of the way the world works, okay? So if you wronged me, I am allowed to wipe out your family as I take revenge. This is how tribal clans and clashes worked. There was whatever you could get away with, you did. And so originally, this first command, where God says to his people, listen, if someone wrongs you in a deep way, an eye for an eye, I'll read it to you here. I said we weren't going to go there, but, you know, I don't like just in case you don't trust me. This is in Exodus 21:23. I got all the numbers around it right, but neither of them correct. But if there is a serious injury, you are to take life for life, eye for eye, tooth for tooth, hand for hand, foot for foot, burn for burn, wound for wound, bruise for bruise. And the idea sounds to us like, wow, you are really allowed to get even. But in the beginning, the first time this story was given, the command actually was moving a step back from unmitigated revenge into saying it needs to be proportionate. Okay? At that time, this was radical. This is super hard for us because we want to put our modern lens on everything we read in the Bible. At the time, it was radical. But it was not the ultimate goal. It was a stopgap. God was using that to meet a certain people where they were at in a certain time and place. And now Jesus is getting a chance to work with a new people in a new time and a new place. So he says, you've heard this was said, but I tell you, don't resist an evil person. The word for resist is the same thing that you just saw from Jess. The idea of resist is meeting with an equal and opposite force, okay? And the word is almost always connected with violence in some way. So Jesus says, listen, if you've been wronged, the temptation is going to be to resist in kind, to use the same type of force to get your way versus the other way. Does that make sense? So if someone insults you, if someone talks bad behind your back, then you do the same thing about them. And you say, hey, it's all fair game. And that's our natural temptation. So Jesus says, listen, the natural temptation is to resist evil by doing the exact same methods and tactics just to get our own ends. Okay? But here's what I'm going to say to you. Because he is talking to a people that are not just living their life. They're an oppressed people group. And so here's what he says. But if anyone slaps you on the right cheek, turn to them the other cheek also. Okay, so this is where, this is why I've been so excited. No. If anyone slaps you on the right cheek, turn to them the other also. We need to understand, a few years ago, in doing more research about the Hebrew culture, a man named Walter Wink blew the doors wide open on this passage in a beautiful new way that helps us understand why this is not just saying, hey, shut up and take it. This is the way of Christians. Instead, Jesus is talking about something different when someone is oppressed. See, here's the story. Right cheek. Okay, Jess, which is your right cheek? Okay. Okay. How can I hit you on your right cheek? What are the options I have? I can do this?
Yeah.
Okay, so I can do a left hook. Anybody have any idea in a Jewish ancient world what that problem might be with a left hook? Why can't I use my left hand? There are certain hands that are used for certain tasks and they were deemed unclean. You could not do anything publicly with your left hand, okay? So the left hand is not what you would be using in this case. But how else then, if her right cheek is over here, what are my options then?
Backhand.
Also, we're talking about a slap, which is different than a punch. So the only option is a backhand. Okay. A backhand was used not in fighting equals, but in a message of superiority and humiliation. A slap was used from a master to a slave. A slap was used from a Roman soldier to a Jewish occupied person. A slap was used from a husband to a wife. A slap was used from a parent to a child. Okay? It was a method of showing control and domination. Okay? When I would slap somebody with the back of my hand, it was putting them in their place. Okay? So, when someone looks down on you and chooses to humiliate you, you have the option to fight back or to run away. But I tell you, Jesus says, what? Turn the other cheek also. So you are slapped with the backhand across the side of the cheek. And instead of cowering and running away, the teaching is to stand up strong and to turn the other cheek. Not to punch, but to turn the cheek. What is Jesus teaching us here? Jesus is teaching that those who are seen as less than human need to be encouraged to find creative ways to nonviolently assert their humanity. Because if she turns the other cheek, I am forced to punch her with a cut, or because I'm still not using my left hand, so I am forced to use a fist. Fists is how equals would fight. So again, this is not saying bring it on, I'm ready for a fight, but this is saying if you are going to hit me, you are going to have to hit me as an equal, seeing the humanity and the dignity that I have as another person. I am not beneath you. It's still not choosing to fight fire with fire, right? It's a third way. It's creative. It's different. But Jesus is talking to people who would know exactly what it was like to be backhanded in a statement of humiliation. And he says, turn to them the other cheek. Don't let them take your humanity away from you. This is very active. This makes people very uncomfortable. Now, granted, we're going to see later that Jesus is not saying, hey, go ahead and fight them just like anybody else would, but he's saying, learn how to assert your humanity. The next one follows in the exact same suit. This is great. Okay, if anyone wants to sue you and take your shirt, hand over your coat as well. Jess, could you please put this around your waist? And so in Hebrew culture, there was much of, like, the poor folks, there was a real debtor's prison issue going on. Someone who was poor and had gone into debt or servitude, it just kept getting deeper and deeper. You're going to put this over your shoulders. So it was a common practice, again, in settling debts, when someone could not pay a debt, the way that you would humiliate that person was you were allowed to go ahead and sue them, literally, the coat off your back. You've heard this phrase, right? You know, they're suing me for the coat off my back or the clothes off my back. You could, as a tactic of humiliation, even though you weren't gaining much from an old piece of clothing, but you could sue them to the point where if they had nothing left to give, you could say, we're taking your outer garment, your coat. Now, you weren't actually allowed to keep it overnight because those who didn't have homes actually used this as a blanket or as a covering. So you had to return it by nightfall. but you could take it away as an act of humiliation. You have nothing left. Okay. So, in this case, you had an outer garment and an inner garment. And unfortunately, the phrase shirt and coat is not really helpful, because tunic and undergarment is actually more helpful, because it sounds like your coat is like the overcoat, but that's not actually what's happening. It's actually the thing that covers up everything else. So here's the deal. So if what we get is somebody saying, you're trying to humiliate me, but you know what? You're already taking everything I have. So here we go, Jess. So you say in court, you know what? Take it all. Now, why was this something that would actually change the ball game? It's because in Jewish culture, nakedness was not a shame to the one that was naked. It's a shame to the one who looked onto the nakedness. That's why we have in the Old Testament that, like, you know, children find out that their father is naked and they back up. Anybody know which story that is? Noah, right? Okay. So they find out Noah had, I think it was too much to drink and was not making real great life decisions at the time, and he fell asleep and he's uncovered, and the children were not able to look on him because the shame would be theirs, not their father's. Just interesting cultural realities. So what Jesus is saying here is, listen, if people are taking you down to the point where they want to show off the fact that they've taken everything that you have, just go ahead and literally give them everything that you have. And what they will have to do is they would have to actually, you could go to jail for looking at a naked person. We might need some laws like that today. Sorry. Okay. edit that part out. So we've got this world where, again, you're turning the tables. You're saying, you know what? Take a look. I am not someone less than human. I will assert I have a choice. I have an opportunity to make a choice. Again, it is nonviolent and it is creative, but you are not fighting back and you are not running away. You are saying, if you're going to look at me, you're going to acknowledge my humanity. I'm changing. I'm turning the power tables. And all of a sudden, I have the power because you're the one saying, oh my goodness, what? You get that? I do all these things to you, and then you do something that makes me have to take action. I am no longer able to dominate in the same way. Now I am liable to go to jail. Sounds funny, sounds goofy. Just go ahead and look at Leviticus if you want to find out about even more weird laws. Okay, so that's number two, okay? And the final one is about a backpack, which I have. Okay, so you want to be the soldier? Or do you want to be the person? Well, you've kept getting beat up, so let's keep you in that situation. Okay, yeah, are you feeling less than human yet, Jess? I should have had you sign a disclaimer before you came up here. Okay, so the final statement, well, the final in this triad here is, if anyone forces you to go 1 mile, go with them 2 miles. Again, this is where go the extra mile. That little, what's it called? What are those things called?
Idiom.
Yeah, it doesn't, that's not really getting at what's happening here, although maybe in one slice it is. During Roman occupation, a Roman guard could require the occupied people, a Jewish person, to serve them at any given time. This is one of the benefits of being an occupying superpower. So if you were walking around and you wanted tasks done, there were certain laws that you could demand that Jewish people had to do, okay? And one of those was a Roman soldier could require a Jewish person to carry their soldier pack, but only up to 1 mile. All of these were very, very carefully measured out rules and laws. This is, by the way, why we don't see much of a question when it's included that Simon the Cyrene had to carry the cross of Jesus, because they needed it. They didn't want to do the dirty work, and so they were legally allowed, they made the rule, but they were allowed to just demand, you carry, or we're going to beat you or throw you in jail, and they had to comply. So when the Roman soldier, who is me in this case, sees this Jewish person and says, hey, you're going to carry my bag. I don't want to carry it anymore. And guess what? You got to carry it an entire mile. So come on, stop whatever you're doing. And we walk along, and we walk along, and we walk along. And we get to that point where it's time for that to go back. You tired yet? You know, all of these ideas. And we get to that point where that 1 mile is up. And this is all done with the commanding officer in view. This is very, Jesus says, hey, when that moment comes, what if you say, actually, no worries, I got it. Let's go another mile. the one who has just been dehumanized, I can make you do whatever I want. What do I have to do now? I need that back. I'm going to get in trouble with my superior if I don't get this back right now, so I need it back. All of a sudden, the power structure turns on its end, and I have to acknowledge your humanity. Before this, you were just a body. All of a sudden, you've asserted yourself and said, actually, I'll help out more. Why? I don't mind. Mm-hmm. I'll go further. And in doing so, you say, I am a human being that has the right to dignity, and by doing this, I am forcing you to actually have to make a new choice now. Instead of me being able to choose everything for you. Now I'm at the mercy of my commanding officer who could see it and punish me, not you. And so in these little things, thank you, Jess, in these little things, we get a glimpse of Jesus teaching us, beautiful, Jesus teaching us a third way beyond a fight or flight idea and mentality. But never in the midst of this does Jesus say to resist in the same way that you are being mistreated. Never does Jesus say fight blow for blow or eye for eye or tooth for tooth. Instead, he says there is a different way of the kingdom. But that way actually isn't about getting run over and being abused. It's about learning to assert yourself in such a way that honors your humanity. And interestingly, the goal is not just to care for yourself. The goal is actually the redemption of the oppressor. The goal here is that the oppressor would see the humanity beyond what has been dehumanized. And even in a choice of not to fight back, would see something different and unique that would draw them to value who you are, even if they couldn't handle it yet, by seeing something that was totally different. And it's really important for us to be able to dive into this and understand that there is always a third way. Jesus goes on and says, give to the one who asks you, and do not turn away from the one who wants to borrow from you. This is talking about the way that the world works financially and saying, you know, we use money as a god and we hoard it. And so when someone is in need, we are to be open-handed. One of you called us up this week because there was an urgent need with someone in your work field where there was a need to care for someone who was experiencing homelessness and crisis at the moment. And the call said, hey, what can we do about this? Can we find a way to give some money to provide shelter for this night? And so we just did a quick check with our leadership team and said, absolutely, let's do that. And it was a way for us in one small way to live out as a church the idea that, listen, if there is someone who is legitimately in need, we want to be people who live open-handedly enough to not have to protect ourselves before we can give to another, to not have to figure out always how to rationalize not being generous or to say, well, there's probably a better method. Sometimes Jesus says, hey, just learn how to live in such an open-handed way that you can give when someone is in need. That when someone needs help, that you don't turn them away if there's anything that you can do. These are all times where we can look at our power struggles and choose to maintain the power systems or choose to start to equalize everything. And we have this beautiful, beautiful opportunity. So the first continuum that Jesus talks about is between fight or flight, and the answer is active, nonviolent engagement, right? We reveal the humanity of ourselves when we are being mistreated. We help other people reveal their humanity and assert their own humanity when we see them being mistreated. This is what anti-bullying is all about, right? We step in and we say, whoa, it's not okay to treat somebody else like that. When I see my kids doing something in the neighborhood, or when I hear a story, we say, whoa, 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 we need to talk about that. That's not okay for that person to say that to you, and you need to say that that's not okay. You don't kick them or hit them, but also, and then sometimes it's on the other side. Whoa, do you realize when you said that or when you behaved in that way, how that was treating that person as a less than? Like we have to learn how to assert the humanity of the people who are being overlooked, who are being oppressed. We have to make sure that we are caring for them. So the first continuum is there. The second continuum that we often have, and this is more about what's happening inside of us, not how we respond in the outside world, but what's happening inside of us is we have this desire, and on one side, when we've been wronged, when we've been wronged, on one side, we want to get even. So that's our one option. And on the other side is to dwell in bitterness. You see these things? So one, we try to get revenge on the one end when we've been wronged. And on the other end, we don't get revenge. We just remove ourselves, similar to a flight. But what starts to build up in us is this bitterness and dislike and hatred even that can grow toward the other person. And so the second thing that Jesus talks about in the next passage that follows this, the first one was about asserting our own humanity. The second part is learning to see the humanity of someone else so that we can get rid of the bitterness or the need for revenge that we might be drawn to do. The next passage in Matthew 5:43, you have heard that it was said again, love your neighbor, that's in the Bible, that's in the Old Testament, and hate your enemy. That's one of those parentheses of, and this is what you've turned it into. Love your neighbor, and therefore you think you can hate your enemy. But I tell you, love your enemies and pray for those who persecute you, that you might be children of your Father in heaven. He causes his sun to rise on the evil and the good, and sends rain on the righteous and the unrighteous. Rain is a good thing, not a bad thing. Most of my life I thought that meant that God sends junk to everybody. But because I didn't like rain. But in an agricultural world, rain's a blessing. God blesses both the evil and the good and the righteous and the unrighteous. God's care is for all, even those who are not deserving, right? If you love those who love you, what reward will you get? Aren't even the tax collectors doing that? And if you greet only your own people, only your own family, only the ones who are just like you, what are you doing more than others? Don't even the pagans, the ones who don't believe in God, do that. Be perfect. That means be moving toward completeness, therefore, as your Heavenly Father is perfect. Learning how to love our enemies and pray for those who persecute us is one of the greatest challenges in the world. I remember one of the most profound experiences that I had of the internal struggle happened a little more than 10 years ago. I was living in Pennsylvania, and we had a park behind our house, and I would go there and I would write sometimes, think about lessons. I was a youth pastor at the time. Sometimes I would go and I'd play disc golf, so I'd bring my discs out and I'd throw in the field and all these things. And there was this group of maybe mid-20s that were sitting at this picnic table in the middle of the park, and they were calling out at people, doing cat calls, but also making fun of children, doing some really, really inappropriate stuff. And people had begun on the park path to not take the path that led near there, but to take this wide berth all the way around the outside edge of the park, even leaving the paved path, just so they didn't have to come anywhere near these people. I didn't know what to do. I was really offended. This was my park. I lived on it, you know. This was the park that my kids were going to be growing up in. They'd just been born. So anyways, I was just kind of fuming about it, but just annoyed at them, and I had to get past them to get back to my house in my backyard. I had really long hair. Not really long, but longer than it is now, so pretty long. And as I was going, they decided to turn all of their little, their kind of attack on me and analyzing what I was wearing and my hair and stupid stuff, really infantile, calling me a girl, all of these things. And I remember being so humiliated but also so angry that I just wish I had a great comeback in that moment. And I remember thinking, you know what? I bet Jesus would have said something to make him put him in their place, right? Make him feel terrible about how much of a jerk they're being. And I went back to my house, and I could actually see them right out my window about 75 yards away. And I'm just fuming at this point. So I'm sitting down in my kitchen trying to deal. I'm not an angry person. So when I get angry, I don't know how to deal with it. I'm really angry at this point, and I don't know what I'm doing. And so, kind of out of desperation, I'm like, I just need to pray, because I'm really struggling right now. Unfortunately, that was like a last resort. I encourage you to consider it earlier in the process. So I just take a deep breath, and I say, God help me, and that quickly became, God help them. And only about 30 seconds later, I looked up and said, aha, I have to go buy these guys a Coke. And that was what came. You have to go buy them a Coke. So we had a 7-Eleven about 2 blocks from my house. So I walked over there, or drove over there, I think, real quick. Bought like a 6-pack of Cokes, of, you know, 20-ounce bottles of Coke. Walked back to my house. Started walking out the back door thinking, I have no idea what I'm about to do or why. And it feels stupid. And these people they feel dangerous to me. I feel like they could beat me up. I'm not a great, you know, midweight fighter. So I see, they see me coming over, and they all straighten up. They get real rigid, right? Because they had just been flinging insults at me, and all I did was just kind of do one of these things. I didn't say a word to them. I just like, you know what? The heck with you. And so I walk toward them, and they know, they can tell I'm coming right toward them. And so they kind of straighten up and stand. And I walk up to them, and I say, "Hey, guys, it's kind of hot out here. I had a bunch of Cokes at my house very recently. And I thought you might be thirsty." And they stared at me for a couple seconds. And then the guy who's kind of the ringleader quickly sticks out his hand in my face, says, "Hey, man, sorry about what we said back there. I mean, no offense, dude. No, you know. Hope it wasn't a big deal." Nah. Oh, you said something? No, but immediately, an act of kindness turned the table. I don't know the long-term impact on them, but I know the long-term impact on me. And that's a part of what learning to follow the teachings of Jesus in this way, where we understand that God's heart is for the goodness of all people, even those who do wickedness. God's heart is for them. God is for people. And he longs for redemption and restoration and healthy relationships between people and reconciliation with God and people. That is God's heart and longing. And when we can tap into that, and when we can sit enough with God to be aware of our own sin, our own, the evil that is within us, the potential for darkness that C.S. Lewis said, the line between good and evil runs right down the center of the human heart. When we can do that, when we can learn that we are capable of making really poor choices too, all of a sudden we begin to be able to see the humanity in the other. We begin to see the humanity even in the people that wrong us. And when that opportunity comes for us and we've been wronged and our two choices are either to get even or to just stew in it for weeks or years. And some of you know exactly what I'm talking about because you've had trouble shaking the wrongs that have been done to you. And it's created this deep hole, this darkness of bitterness in you. And you don't want it, but you don't know how to get rid of it. And this is not an easy fix, by the way. And we are also not saying that you can simply let go of any wrong that's ever been done. Some of you walk around with deep wounds because you've been hurt badly. And those things are going to be things that you continue to work with. But I am convinced that through the power of Jesus, bitterness does not have to be the thing that defines you and eats you away for the next years of your life. And so the hope is that as we learn to engage in this, we can start to see a better future because we learn how to assert our own humanity in times where we are mistreated or looked down upon, right? I was just some guy at the beginning of that story that was another easy victim for them to make fun of. But I was a human being who did something that they had to acknowledge in the second half of the story. So there was an asserting of my own humanity, but at the same time, I, through prayer, became aware of their humanity. So it's an elevating of everybody's God mark in their lives. And as soon as we can identify that the enemies in our lives are created by God and that God has a heart for them, it changes how we do everything. It changes how we walk around day to day. But what about when the stakes are higher? I want to show you a brief film, brief video clip that was published a couple of years ago. S.M. Nagy, who is a young man who's a TV producer, he presents a show on a station called SAT7 Kids that is an Iraqi station. And it's a program called Why Is That? And they go around to children and they put a microphone in their face and they ask them goofy questions and they say, "Why is that?" And they hear what kids have to say about the reality of the world, right? You know, "Why is the sky blue? Why is that?" And they let them just say. And it's a fun, lighthearted show. But in the midst of ISIS taking over parts of Iraq, they traveled to one of the refugee camps. And it's a Christian show, by the way, with a foundation. So they traveled to one of the Iraqi refugee camps, and they decided to interview some of the children there about why they have the attitude that they have in the midst of having to flee their homes and towns because of ISIS taking over their cities and attacking. And I thought it was important to hear this perspective from children who have been formed already by the way of Jesus.
النهارده يا اولاد احنا هنيجي نزور مجموعه ثانيه من الاطفال في مكان اسمه عنكاوا مول. تعالوا ندخل جوه ونشوف الاولاد النهارده عايشين ازاي. ازيك يا فلورين؟
مليحه.
وازيك يا مريوم؟
زينه.
انت كويسه؟
يس.
طيب انتوا لما بتفتكروا ايام كراكوش والوقت بتاع بيتكم، ايه اكتر حاجه بتزعلوا ان هي مش موجوده هنا دلوقتي؟
احنا نريد مدرستنا وكنيستنا. يسوع معانا اي مكان نروح، يسوع معانا. هو
يعني حتى هنا في المخيم يسوع معاكي؟
نعم.
يسوع فين؟
قلبنا.
طب واللي يسوع يبقى عايش في قلبه مش بيبقى بيضحك؟
ايه،
عشان كده انتوا بتضحكوا صح؟ ازيك يا مريم؟
زينه. انت كيفك؟
انا زي الفل. انت بتتفرجي عليه شيك فعلا؟
ايوه.
طب وايه رايك، بتحبي البرنامج؟
ايوه.
تحبي سات 7 كيدز؟
ايه.
ايه اكتر حاجه انت حاسه ان هي كنت بتحبيها في كراكوش مش موجوده هنا دلوقتي في المخيم؟
كان عندنا بيت وكنا متونسين، بس يعني هنا ما متونسين، بس الحمد لله يعني الله سترنا.
قصدك ايه يعني ايه الله سترنا؟
يعني الله حبنا وما قبل يعني يقتلونا داعش.
انت حاسه بايه ناحيه الناس اللي ممكن تبقى خرجتك من البيت وتعبتك؟
ما رح أسويهم ولا شيء، بس يعني أقول لله يسامحهم.
وأنت تقدري تسامحيهم كمان؟
أيوة.
كنت بتحبي المدرسة في كراكوش صح؟
أيوة، وكنت أولى دايما.
كان عندك أصحاب كمان في المدرسة؟
أيوة.
مريم أنت عارفة أن أنت بطلة؟
أنا أحب أكون بطلة وأحب أيضا أكون بالمدرسة، لأن اللي بالمدرسة يحبون المدرسة، هم اللي كانوا يطلعون دائما أوائل.
أنت علمتيني حاجات كتير قوي.
شكرا. وأنت حتى علمتني.
علمتك إيه أنا؟
علمتني يعني ما علمتني يعني حسيت بمشاعري. حسيت بمشاعري، أنا كان عندي مشاعر وأريد يعني يعرفون الناس إيش هي مشاعر هذول الأطفال اللي هنا. حبي لي فادية مجيد يوما فيا ومن سيزيد عمر جديد يوم سعيد يوم اتحاد بالحبيب.
If those whose lives have been torn apart by evil can learn to find hope and move beyond the need to get revenge or the need to be defined by bitterness, then surely we can make movement too as we trust Jesus. I find the story of that young lady so incredibly profound, and find that we sometimes get lost in our tiny little irritations to the point that we no longer are able to see the message of Jesus and how radical and beautiful and life-transforming it can be. Because sometimes maybe you don't feel like you have those huge things. And so you're like, well, maybe this, yeah, I don't have a problem with not forgiving my enemies. But do you walk around irritated at people all the time because they're stupid or because they disagree with you or because they do little things that make your life more difficult? This is the same camp. It's a big camp that Jesus is trying to free us from. And the early church, you know, Paul, when he was summarizing it, I love how he talks about it. Don't repay anyone evil for evil. That's the don't resist an evildoer with the same exact type of force, just in an opposite direction. Be careful to do what's right in the eyes of everyone. If it's possible, as far as it depends on you, live at peace with everyone. Don't take revenge, but leave room for God's wrath, for it's written, it's mine to avenge. I will repay, says the Lord. That statement, it's mine, says God. You can trust me, God says. I don't trust you to take revenge yourself. You can trust me with that. I will do what's right. You can release that. And it's for your sake too. It's not just for theirs. On the contrary, if your enemy's hungry, feed him. If he is thirsty, give him something to drink. In doing this, you will heap burning coals on his head. Do not be overcome by evil, but overcome evil with good. This is a way to get even better. If you need to get even by showing someone so much love that they can't help, that they can't possibly continue in the same path that they've been on without taking notice of what beauty and radical goodness and love look like. If you want to get even, there's a better way to do so. So we can do this. We can live in such a way that that empowers ourselves if we are being mistreated in a nonviolent, beautiful way that asserts our humanity, but also sees the humanity within the other. So here are the options that you have. Here's just some questions. When you have been mistreated, when someone mistreats you, consider all of the ways that you might respond and ask this question. Ask these two questions. Based on how I might respond when someone mistreats me, what does it do to them? And what does it do to me or to you? What does it do to you based on the different ways that you might respond? Okay?